The next case on our calendar is 06-286, in re Sean Tompkins. Ms. Frederick.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the court, I'm Jennifer Frederick, representing the State of Ohio and the Montgomery County Children's Services Board. And at this time, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
Put your time there.
Thank you. The State of Ohio is asking that this court reverse the decision of the Second District Court of Appeals, which held that the trial court did not have personal jurisdiction over the legal father when the trial court awarded permanent custody of the minor child to the Montgomery County Children's Services Board. In reaching this decision, the Second District Court of Appeals held that when certified mail is returned to sender with the denotation of attempted not known, CSB is then required to attempt service via ordinary mail. In so holding, the court reasoned that attempted not known is analogous to an unclaimed return, and thus, under the Second District's reasoning, Civil Rule 4.6D is required to be followed.
I think you've indicated to us what your understanding of attempted not known is. Will we find in the record a regulation from the U.S. Postal Authority that tells us what that means? Sort of a cryptic term. I guess I wondered exactly what it means.
That's correct, Your Honor. Unfortunately, at the trial level, there was no introduction of the U.S. Post Office manual at that level. However, I did cite in my brief to Jefferson County Treasurer v. Brown, where it indicated that attempted not known may encompass circumstances where the delivery of mail is attempted, but the addressee is not known at that place of address, which is the exact circumstances that we had in this case. This mail was not unclaimed or otherwise abandoned. Simply, Mr. Crawford, the person to whom the certified mail was addressed, was not found at either of these locations. The main problem with the Second District's reasoning is that it simply guesses at what the post office meant when it marked attempted not known. Specifically, the Second District said that because no option of unclaimed was on the return sticker, that when the post office checked attempted not known, they did not really mean to check attempted not known, they meant to check unclaimed. The state's position is that the other box should have been checked if the mail truly was unclaimed mail. In addition, usually another stamp of unclaimed is stamped across the mail when that occurs.
Is the one that was checked not known the one that went to the mother who said that he doesn't live here?
No, that was actually, Your Honor, mail that was served via personal service from a process server in Montgomery County. That simply was, in the second complaint that was filed, that simply was failed at that time. That was denoted as failed.
So this one went to the address that, the second address that they tried to come up with for him.
That's correct. The Columbus address was sent via certified mail.
So is our issue one then that concerns what constitutes reasonable diligence? Or do you characterize it more in line with what is required by the rule for perfecting service?
Your Honor, the state believes that it's what is required by the rule to perfect service. In this case, I don't think there's any argument that the agency did not use reasonable diligence. In fact, reasonable diligence to find this father was used on behalf of the agency several times due to the refiling of the complaint. And the fact that the agency must perform reasonable diligence before publication. Civil Rule 4.6D is simply not triggered under an attempted not known return. It's only triggered when mail is unclaimed or otherwise abandoned, for example, when someone's trying to avoid service. In this case, there was no problem with the address. There was simply a problem with Mr. Crawford did not reside at these addresses. Therefore, the only means to perfect service in this case was by publication, which is exactly what the agency did in this case.
Was that publication only in Montgomery County? But the address attempted not known was in Franklin County, is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor, and case law states that the publication is to be published in the court you're in. So in this case, the publication would have been in Montgomery County, listing both the Montgomery County and the Columbus address. Additionally, the state believes it's important to note that the father in this case never availed himself to the Court of Common Pleas Juvenile Division throughout the several years that this case was involved in the court. Additionally, when this appeal was first filed in the Second District, an Anders brief was filed due to the fact that the father could not be located at this time. And if this court has no further questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time.
Thank you, Ms. Frederick. Yeah. Mr. Wehner.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. Members of the court, good morning. D.K. Wehner on behalf of Mr. Crawford. In the Smith case that I cited in my brief, the Court of Appeals cites the United States Supreme Court in saying that the right to conceive and raise one's children has been deemed an essential basic civil right of man, a right that's more precious than property rights. The court in Smith went on to state, termination of parental rights is the family law equivalent of the death penalty in a criminal case.
Well, counsel.
Yes, sir.
That being so, and your client was appointed an attorney to represent his interests, was he not?
Yes, sir.
Because of this important right. With all that you've just read us, wouldn't it have been incumbent on the attorney to find his client so that he could determine his client's wishes and his client's suitability to protect these rights?
Yes, sir. I think the record shows that the original appointed attorney attempted to find his client, albeit the implication is somewhat late in the game and came up with several addresses.
He sat at his computer in the office and did a Google search.
Yes, sir.
That's not much effort, is it?
I'm not sure.
You probably hardly broke a sweat doing that.
Yes, sir. Understood. However, before the case ever gets to court, jurisdiction is the ultimate initial issue. And if we don't have
jurisdiction. You can on behalf of a client, if your client's being sued for a lot of money and they don't get the right service, you can make a special appearance, or your objective is to help your client get out of this because the other side hasn't done what they need to get good service. That would hardly be the objective when a child's custody is at stake, would it?
No,
to duck out on a resolution by avoiding service.
Oh, no, sir. I don't know that we know that Mr. Crawford avoided service in this case. What we know is service is unsuccessful in this case. And because service is unsuccessful on the father in this case, that's the reason that the court had no jurisdiction to proceed, and that's what the Court of Appeals says.
Is the father communicating with you now that you're representing him?
No, Your Honor, the father's not communicating with me now, although I did Google him the other day and found a new address. And sent him a letter, albeit not, I don't have a phone number yet.
We're all here worrying about the this important right when apparently he's not so worried about it.
Well, again, does he know about it? As Justice Cupp points out, if he lives in Columbus, what is the probability that he's reading the Dayton or Montgomery County Court Reporter, where this was
it's
publicized?
Not high, right.
If he doesn't know about the proceeding, how does he?
How would you characterize the probability that he cares about this child at all?
Well, there is one thing in the record attached to the state's brief is the paternity order in the case, where at least the entry by the court indicates that when paternity was being decided, He appeared and filed an answer and agreed to a finding of paternity in the case. So, to conclude that he had never, ever had an interest in his child, it would be incorrect, at least insofar as we know that he had notice in the paternity action, appeared, filed an answer, and admitted his paternity of the child. So,
but counsel, that's not an option for the fellow to show up for a paternity at a court order. Is that correct?
An option to...
For the paternity testing, it was ordered that he appear for paternity testing.
That I don't know, Judge. I don't know that that's clear from the record. What I know is that in the entry that's assigned by the...
It establishes paternity.
Yes, and it indicates that the defendant, Mr. Crawford, filed an answer in the case and admitted the allegations contained in the complaint.
Okay.
So whether or not the case even went as far as paternity testing, blood testing, and the like, probably not if he makes his admissions in the paternity action.
And has the client authorized this appeal?
I do not know. I do not know. As I was talking to fellow counsel here, I'm the fourth lawyer on this case. So,
but you've never personally spoken to your client?
I have not spoken to this client on a personal basis. I, again, have attempted to find him and found a new address that's not of record just recently and sent him a letter. So,
and did that letter return unclaimed?
No, not yet. Okay. Whether it comes back or not, I do not know. But the initial lawyer appointed to represent him in the juvenile court made an appearance, stated his objections on the record to the lack of service. And because there was no service, the court did not have jurisdiction to proceed, made that again on behalf of the client after the initial magistrate decision, filed the objections to the magistrate's decision, and then again filed the requisite appeal in the Court of Appeals. Now, interestingly enough, the original lawyer in the Court of Appeals apparently filed an Anders brief indicating that there might not be a meritorious issue, and the initial court review of the file seemed to indicate it might be a reasonable diligence issue, which might be simply a matter of fact as opposed to a issue of law, because they seemed to imply in their original decision appointing new counsel on appeal that it was a matter of whether or not the state had used reasonable diligence to try to find Mr. Crawford.
Counsel, when I asked you before whether this was authorized, your representation, I meant on the appellate level. Were you the appellate attorney?
No. No.
So you don't know.
I'm here in this court for the first time in 30 years of practicing law, based upon the fact that the Second District Court of Appeals decided to the appellate lawyer in the Second District Court of Appeals changed jobs. A new lawyer was needed to respond to the state here in this court.
So the record doesn't indicate at any level whether the father communicated with an attorney and authorized appeal?
Not on the appellate level, Judge.
Okay.
No. There would be nothing in the record. All we have is that the initial lawyer in the juvenile court apparently did not hear from Mr. Crawford.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Warner, the issue in the case really concerns the service requirements,
yes,
on an individual. And while the rule says if a matter comes back unclaimed, then there should be ordinary mail attempted.
Yes, sir.
There was no ordinary mail attempted in this case, but it wasn't unclaimed.
Yes, sir.
It was not known.
Yes, sir.
Now, are you suggesting that we ought to have the ordinary mail requirement attached to that, or is this a matter for a rule change or a case decision? Or,
well,
where do you see the law as a result of this decision?
Well, it seems to me, Judge, that the problem here is that when we require ordinary mail after certified mail is either refused or unclaimed, that's clear in the rule. I think what the Court of Appeals is doing here, and whether that's a matter for this court to decide in this case or whether it's an amendment to the rule, it seems to me that the Court of Appeals is saying, You know what? Attempted, not known, I don't know what that means. Insufficient number. If you go to the website for the United States Postal Service's counsel for the state did in attaching that footnote, there's 10 or 12 reasons broken down one by one as to why mail fails. I think the Court of Appeals is saying, and it may be this court's ruling in this case, or maybe there was an amendment to the juvenile court rules or the civil rules, if certified mail is unsuccessful for whatever reason, ordinary mail should be attempted before we resort to the last resort of publication. That's what I believe that the Court of Appeals is saying, albeit maybe between the lines on this attempted not known, but the result or the aim is the same. Look, we want people to have notice of what's going on.
Yes.
And we want to do it in a fashion that is most likely to get them that notice. So we start with certified mail. Now, we know the vagaries of the postal system. We all rely upon the postal system, but there's a number of things that could happen. Someone could remove my mail from my mailbox, yes, whatever. So we try to do it on a step-by-step basis, certified mail. If unsuccessful, ordinary mail. If it doesn't come back, service deemed complete. If it does come back, now we resort to publication.
But the attempted not known, I mean, I understand that, but presumably it would be that the individual is not at this address, and now we're putting another step on every lawyer in Ohio, presumably in every case, and I appreciate, as you articulate, these cases are equivalent to the death penalty, and so there is some significance to it. But the fact would be, when do lawyers know whether they should just follow the rule, or when do they know that they have to take extra steps beyond what is required? And
counsel, it seems as though you
let him answer the question.
My point is, Judge, I'm not an expert on juvenile law necessarily. I have a practice where I perhaps do some litigation work, and I know that when I file my lawsuit, when it's about property rights, one of the first things I will do then when I get on the website for my local common pleas court is check service.
Yes.
And invariably, whether no matter what happens, it's entered in the records as unsuccessful, as opposed, there may be an explanation, unclaimed, whatever it is, whatever the vagaries of the United States Postal Service, what I know is it's unsuccessful. And if I know it's unsuccessful, then I know I better do something to make sure that I've got service and that it, and I successfully get it no matter what other steps I take under the civil rules.
And the only response to that would be that the state presumably check the rule, realize if it were unclaimed, ordinary mail would be required under our rules. But because this is attempted not known, the next requirement then would be publication. And so presumably there was reasonable diligence. That's why I asked the question in the beginning. And I just think that any rule that we would promulgate other than that sort of injects more confusion into the legal business, so that when you do go to file your lawsuit and you get something, you're not a response that's attempted not known, you're really not sure what you have to do at that point. Follow the rule or do something different.
And perhaps my response would be, if it was deemed that certified mail was unsuccessful for any reason, the rule would be a lot clearer. I don't care whether it's attempted not known or anything. When it's unsuccessful, now I know I've got to do something else.
Thank you.
So, counsel, what you're suggesting is that there be another category added to 4.6. Because right now, C says service refused, D says service unclaimed, and what you're proposing is that there should be another category that says whatever the subsection is, service unsuccessful. And wouldn't that be a matter for rulemaking rather than for our announcing that particular outcome in this case?
Well, I suppose there's a reason why our Court of Appeals opinion that we have in this case doesn't cite any cases. There is no case law ahead of time which would indicate that ruling, but I would suggest this, Justice. Actually, instead of expanding the rule, let's contract the rule. and just make it service unsuccessful. Certified mail, unsuccessful. For whatever reason, unclaimed, refused, attempted, not known, insufficient address. The clerk's office might have put the wrong zip code on the envelope. I don't know. But what I did, what would be clear is if I have to serve somebody, and certified mail is what we start out with as the preferred method to get somebody notice. If I know it's unsuccessful for whatever reason, then I ought to, it ought to be incumbent upon me then to take the next step under the civil rules, most likely to get notice to somebody, which would be ordinary mail.
Again, though, wouldn't that be a matter for us to do through rulemaking? And as Justice O'Donnell has pointed out, if you look at the at D, service unclaimed, it doesn't appear that that category really fits this case. So even though we may not agree with the second district, it may be a matter for, as you suggest, us to respond to through rulemaking.
I can't say that I would disagree with that necessarily. What I am suggesting is that the Court of Appeals, when faced with the facts in this case, indicated and found that attempted not known was the same as unclaimed.
Thank you.
And we don't have, there's a case that was cited in the material somewhere where someone called the postman to the stand to make the record. Whether we don't want to do that in every case here, and so it would be certainly a lot cleaner and a lot easier if we just made it in that fashion.
Thank you, Mr. Wehner.
Thank you.
Ms. Frederick, you've saved a little more than 9 minutes of your time. Let me start you with a question. The Court of Appeals seems to be saying, well, it says, we conclude, therefore, that the return to sender notation, which is a general category under which the specific mark was made here, on the envelope used to attempt certified mail service on Crawford's Columbus address, should be seen as an indication that it was unclaimed, triggering application of Civil Rule 4D. Return to sender does seem to indicate that the person to whom the communication was sent didn't get it, didn't claim it. What's wrong with the Court of Appeals? Sort of, I mean, this is an area in which we're having to make up some law here because we're not helped very much by the rule and by the Postal Service. What's wrong with that conclusion?
Well, Your Honor, there are a couple of things wrong with it. Primarily, the Court of Appeals is guessing as to what the return attempt to not known means, and it has
but,
a clear.
But I want to take you back because it says, therefore, the return to sender, which is the general category, as I take it from the footnote, return to sender notation, they're not even basing it upon the more specific one that was checked, but the fact that it was returned to the sender means that the person to whom it was addressed didn't get it. It's unclaimed, and your argument is that's a bit of too much of a stretch to say the fact that the person to whom the mail was sent didn't get it is not the same as it being unclaimed.
Well, Your Honor, I would agree that
it's the same. It's the same effect, is it not?
I would agree. The result's the same in that. Obviously, the person to whom the mail was supposed to receive the mail did not receive it, but the reasons why the person did not receive the mail are different, and the law, I think, is pretty clear about what remedy, you know, how you're supposed to perfect service from that point based on why the mail was returned to sender.
Well, counsel, if you look at Section D, the first sentence says, if a certified or express mail envelope is returned with an endorsement showing that the envelope is unclaimed, it doesn't say marked unclaimed or, you know, a specific notation of unclaimed. It's just an endorsement, any endorsement, showing that the envelope was unclaimed. And here we have the endorsement of attempted not known. And the fact that the letter came back is a showing that it was, quote, unclaimed. Not the postal stamp unclaimed, but the condition of unclaimed.
Well, that is true.
And if that is the case, what's the big deal about sending out ordinary mail? Why wouldn't that just be an ordinary course of conduct? in these circumstances. If for no other reason, just to cross your T's and dot your I's and make sure you're covered.
Well, because in that circumstance, if the state would have done what the Court of Appeals indicated it should have, which would have been to send ordinary mail, then according to the Court of Appeals, that's all the state would have been required to do. The state would have not then been required to publish after ordinary mail was sent. And this is a problem when, in this case, it looks like from the record.
Well, if the ordinary mail came back.
Of course.
Then you'd have to publish.
Absolutely, absolutely. But if it didn't come back, Mr. Wehner alluded to reasons why people don't receive their mail. Maybe it was stolen. Maybe for whatever reason it didn't end up in their mailbox. I mean, if the ordinary mail didn't come back for that reason, we still wouldn't be required to publish. And that's important because when the agency in this case did several diligent searches to find out where Mr. Crawford resided, there was nothing left for the agency to do once service to these two addresses was unsuccessful. And the reasons that it was unsuccessful are not, as it appears, that Mr. Crawford was avoiding service or that service was being refused on his own behalf. It's just simply that he didn't reside there. And so to send ordinary mail to these addresses would have been futile because he did not reside there any longer. And so in this case, in order to be fair and reasonably certain that Mr. Crawford would have notice of the hearing, the only thing the state was left with was to publish.
Well, counsel, a couple of things could have happened. A, the state spent presumably some money employing appointed counsel for this gentleman. It would seem to me that diligent representation would require that appointed counsel undertake more efforts than a Google search to find his client. So if we're going to write, shouldn't we be stressing that if you're an appointed lawyer, you ought to undertake a diligent effort to find your client, since this is an important matter? That's one question. Then I'll give you a second. Following up on the questions from Justice O'Donnell and Justice Lanzinger, why wouldn't it make sense for us to just improv this case? Had you just gone back and done a do-over, this case would be over and this child would be in the permanent custody already instead of coming up here. And that we respond to the issue raised by making the rule simpler, as your opposing counsel. In other words, we do a rule change instead of doing it through this case, because if we do it through this case, then it affects a lot of things that are in play that may have bad service. So why wouldn't that be a better resolution for this case? You just go back and do it over, and we take a look at the rule.
Okay, Your Honor, I'll address your first question first, which is, should appointed counsel have more responsibility to track down their client? Absolutely, if they're gonna disagree with the search results that the state came up with as a result of their diligent search. I believe if they're going to keep appealing this matter up to the Second District Court of Appeals, that absolutely they need to find their client to see at this point, how his interests are best served, because I'm not sure in this case that his interests are reflected at all, since he never availed himself to the trial court. And then to answer your second question with regard to the do-over, the state is not just concerned with this case. We're concerned with every other case that could affect potentially any adoption in our county in which permanent custody was awarded to Montgomery County Children's Services. We're afraid that these awards of custody could be overturned if a non-involved parent later.
You're worried that if we write this the way the appellee would have his write it, and I'm not sure that he has argued that permanent custodies that have already been awarded across this state could be called into question?
Yes, the state's position is that they absolutely could be disrupted.
Well, then why wouldn't it be a better way to just improv this case and change the rule? If that's your concern, then we...
Because I don't think the rule needs to be changed. I think the law is pretty clear that if after a diligent search, or reasonably diligent search, that is, there's... And service has been unsuccessful due to the fact that the addressee no longer lives at these residences. The only thing to do at that point is to publish. I believe the law is very clear on that. And then if, you know, mail is denoted unclaimed, then ordinary mail under Civil Rule 4.6D, you know, must be sent at that point.
Counsel, I don't know if it'll make you feel any better, but we struggle with these same issues when we deal with the discipline of lawyers. Lawyers who've gotten into a lot of trouble a lot of times just drop out of sight. And we can deliver a death penalty to their license. So clearing this up may be something we ought to do for everybody's good.
Absolutely. And if this court has no further questions, the state just respectfully requests that this court overturn the Second District Court of Appeals.
Thank you, Ms. Frederick.
Thank you.
Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.